Like most days, I cycled down to work from where I live, just like any other day, really. We congregated in what we called the coffee boat, probably best known by most people as the rest area there. And it was no different to any other day. We were all quite excited because we would go to Strasbourg. And I suppose I got down to the barracks at around about just after 8 o'clock. And I'd actually been in the rest area there talking to a lot of the guys. Trev Davis, I can remember talking to, sat down next to Trev, talking to Dean Pavey, because Dean was the man who served the coffees and kept everybody sort of refreshed as the morning went. What caused me to leave that area was the fact that I was the duty corporal that day, and I was destined to report to the RSM at 8:30. So around about 20 past 20, just afterwards, I suggested to this other guy that we would go and report for our duty. I walked through what was our changing area, and this young lad by the name of Mark Petch, he came into the room and he says to me, I have to say that Mark was very sadly killed as well. He said to me, "Billy," and of course people say now, "Well, surely your name was Brian," but everybody in the band service knew me as Billy. Of course, named after Billy Walker, the boxer. I saw Mark, and Mark said to me, "Billy, do you mind if I put my PE kit on your locker?" And I said, "Mark, that's great, as long as there's not a bomb in it." And that was my passing words to him, something that really does stick in my mind to this day. As I ventured further on my cycle, I saw Dave McMillan saying cheerio to his wife, Mandy, on the edge of the parade ground. And I just cycled down Canada Road, just got into South Barracks when up it went. My first thoughts at that time, like most people, thought that it's perhaps a gas explosion. Then there was another guy with me called Alan Sessions, and Alan sort of went flying over the fence into it, and I said, "Look, Alan, maybe you shouldn't go in there. I don't know, there might be problems, other problems or whatever." And my first reaction was to grab as many people as I could and secure all of the roads effectively. So from South Barracks I sent some up Canada Road, and then I took people right down from Campbell Road, York Road, and then to the very end of the Deal Dover Road there. And then actually when that seemed to be going well, and I was relieved by we used to have traffic wardens then, she suggested that she would take over. So I actually then went round to the site itself, and I think there was a lot of relief from a lot of people that they'd actually then seen me, because the last people had seen of me was that I was in the room itself, and probably the only other people that would have been able to witness that they'd saw me were very, very tragically killed. And then I can remember going by the area there, and people were still digging and trying to get, and I can vividly see some of the guys lay there just so still, and their hair blowing in what breeze was there. Then every so often people would say, "Right, keep quiet," and we'd have a listen to see if there was any movement, anybody, anything that could be sort of done. But I think very, very clearly by then it was too late for those guys that were still within the wreckage there. And of course then a lot of the people then had been taken off to local hospitals, everything had been immobilized. Generally I think some of the lesser injured went down to Deal Hospital, but I can remember a very good friend of mine was taken off to Buckland Hospital. He was very badly injured, and I think by somebody had sort of thought then, this is not the place for people that were involved, and I was very quickly moved away from that area. And then really my job then was to try and comfort some of the younger musicians that probably witnessed a lot more horrendous sort of sights that morning than I did.
I gather there had been a pretty recent entry, a matter of days, the new entry.
Yeah, there was a new entry squad, and they were probably practicing their drill on the parade ground at that time, so they were some of the very first people on the scene. And I can recall the 20th anniversary this year, that a lot of those guys, 20 years on, came back to commemorate and obviously pay their respects to the events of 20 years ago.
Tell me, when the bomb went off, sort of as the crow flies, how far would you have been?
Not more than about 150 metres maybe, right. Maximum.
You obviously were one of the first guys to start putting a cordon in.
Absolutely.
And were the police and fire and ambulance on the scene pretty quickly?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I felt that somebody had to do something from there. You know, it was just what you do, evaluate the situation and then think about what would be best. And the general idea there was, because we all know how busy Canada Road can be, you know, and people were still coming to work, you know, they were saying what had gone on and everything. And I said, well, you're not going to want to hear this, but there's a bomb actually gone off in the barracks. But I felt that by securing those roads, it would then ease the flow of emergency vehicles coming in, and I think that was proven anyway, because we could stop traffic and people could, the emergency services, whatever was needed, and of course eventually a crane came on the scene. So there was lots of, I suppose really, I wouldn't say it was confusion, but this sort of thing had never happened around East Kent before. So, but I think the people that were on the ground carried out everything so professionally, but and of course people coming in their droves to actually sort of volunteer for donating blood if they needed to, or can I help with the telephones, and can I do this, come and make teas or whatever. And very, very quickly the main galley was up and running and serving hot food to people that were there that needed some sort of food. Of course people didn't feel like eating, but again, I sort of encouraged them to sort of put something inside them, you know. And I think I was probably in the barracks till, I'm guessing, around about 3 o'clock that day. And then it was sort of really said, right, go home. And that was then the first time that I saw my wife. We actually lived in York and Albany close at the time, so...
Had they heard the bomb up there?
Yeah, I think everybody had. I think people said they could hear it for quite some distance. And I was fortunate enough, because on Canada Road there's a chiropodist. I'm not sure if they're still there or not. But these two gentlemen were very, very kind and let me use their phone, because we're talking pre-mobile phones. They were very, very kind, and I was able to telephone my wife and reassure her that I'm okay. There's a lot of people that aren't, but I'm okay. You know, don't worry, I'm okay, I'm safe, everything like that.
Did you know straight away there were casualties?
Yeah, yeah, well, I'd been told by the traffic warden that took over my sort of post on the end of Canada Road there that she said there are fatalities. And of course, I think when we first went round, the number was around about 4 or 5, because it wasn't necessarily an issue. But of course, because people were... had different sort of duties as such, some were not having to come in till 9 o'clock because they'd been playing late the night before, it wasn't very, very easily to actually piece together a nominal of who was where at that time. So it probably took a little bit of working out where everybody was. I can remember going around there and they'd just taken off one of the guys, Bob Simmons, who apparently was sort of sat there having a laugh and you know, he was in a bad way, but Bob's sense of humour was still there, and very sadly he died sort of later that day.